Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
If you guys have been listening to Breaking Banks over the last few years, you know that we like to delve into some of the regional plays in terms of what is happening in the fintech space and, you know, how some different behaviors that emerge in different markets are starting to define fintech in those markets with sort of some unique personality. So in China, you know, one of the big things that emerged in China was, of course, the red packets and the ability to leverage off network effect there and so forth. But on the African continent, it was all about the mobile money networks those that emerged. And we've done coverage of the Kenyan market before. We've talked sort of a pan-African context. I'm having trouble talking today, including looking at the Nigerian markets and looking at South African markets and others. So we wanted to delve a little bit more into what's happening on the African continent and some of the drivers technically for the growth of fintech there based on the handset infrastructure and the sort of ecosystem there that's emerging, which the one difference between sort of what's happening, I would say, in Africa versus what's happening in China is the telcos are much more intimately involved in what's happening in deployment in Africa. So that does change the context a little bit. So I've invited a couple of experts from the market to join us on the show today. We have an old friend of ours we've been working with for a couple of years now, Peter de Villiers. He's the co-founder and CEO at Clickatel. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Brett.
And we will also be joined by your Chief Commercial Officer, Hannes, in the second half of the show. But also joining us from the African continent, Nico Jacobs. He's the Executive Sales, VP of Executive Sales and Distribution at MTN. Nico, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Brett.
Now, Nico, where are you based physically?
Well, we're based in Johannesburg, and we've got quite an extensive footprint throughout Africa. But yeah, based in Joburg, living in Cape Town, so best of both worlds.
There you go. So living the dream, as they say. All right. So let's talk first about MTN's business as a whole. So what can you tell us about MTN's footprint in terms of your African presence, Nico? More broadly.
Well, as you know, obviously we deep rooted in South Africa. That's where we started, and we managed to catch the expansion wave in the rest of Africa. So we got close to 230 million customers in the broader African continent. A couple of obviously Middle East Africa as well, but basically the African footprint. All the big countries in Africa: Nigeria, Uganda, Ghana. We got an extensive footprint in Africa and. Africa is a very interesting continent. A lot of folks see it as the land of opportunity. It's probably a bit difficult to trade in those countries, but I mean, I think we've got good people on the ground. We've got good management, stakeholder management, and it's a big opportunity for us to just to make a difference in the lives of not only people in South Africa but the rest of Africa. So, as a fundamental, we've got this belief in our system that every single person has a right to a modern connected world, and that's what we set out to do. We make sure we got good coverage, good network. We cover vast amounts of the population in those areas and geographies. A huge focus on handsets, making sure that's the other enabling part. And then once you've got a good powerful network with good throughput speeds and you've got good handset functionality, then it lays the fertile ground for doing a lot of things over those environments.
Yeah, now that's interesting, sort of the handset. You've covered the cost of or access to the market, so you're looking at that on a handset basis and also network basis. So you guys have a pretty interesting market where you moved from sort of feature phones, the Nokia, and using SIM-based menus and so forth, and obviously that's still a strong play. But we've also seen the emergence of both what you call sort of rich feature phones and entry-level smartphones that are really competitive. So what does it cost to sort of get a basic smartphone that's sort of been purpose-built for Africa these days?
Yes, I think the issue we have in the continent and even in South Africa itself is the huge diversity. We've got massive Gini coefficients, and you'll find, for example, lots of folks in the top end using the latest Samsung, Huawei, Apple devices. In the bottom end, you've got guys who still need the connectivity, but haven't got the affordability. And we find, especially, so obviously you start with a 2G network and you can do the feature phone stuff, and later as you progress to 3G LTE space, the function has to evolve, but the customers evolution rate and your evolution rate on different streams. So we made a huge focus in terms of how do we transition certain customers from 2G handsets into the 3G and LTE stuff. So the Smart S device, the Smart T device, those devices are, you know, basically 3G phones, but maybe a bit watered down in terms of full functionality. So you can probably get a 3G device at less than $20, which is a good entry price point for that market, with very specific functionality like a WhatsApp Lite kind of version as opposed to the full version, because obviously what brings the cost of the device up besides camera and memory and all this stuff is just basically the package in terms of memory and camera and all this kind of stuff. So you need to basically make the memory, because the memory is lighter, you have to basically fit the almost like fit for purpose the device kind of thing, etc. So a lot of the smart range of those kind of devices, and you know, got good contacts with the guys from China picking certain devices. We actually build the device for certain features, just to transition the guys off 2G into 3G, and then a huge amount of focus on that LTE market where you can probably buy probably for like around the $85-$95 mark a 4G phone, which is a good entry point, and just more for customers, just migrating and transitioning in that space. Because like I said, once you've got a good network and you've got a good handset, then utility can kick in.
Yeah, very interesting. And so this again speaks to a little bit of the African approach. You mentioned WhatsApp. And you also mentioned sort of the concept of recharging minutes and recharging data, which was a big sort of piece of, it almost became a currency airtime in Africa, didn't it? To some extent.
Yes. Definitely. I think
it did happen in India as well, but more so in Africa.
Yeah, I think they've redefined Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Of the food and shelter data features and airtime and connectivity features quite considerably there. I think also by virtue of the African continent, a lot of migrant workers and guys working cross-border, etc., a lot of that connectivity, making sure you can actually access your family back home and all those things, become critical place for us. And it's really about making sure you can just give everybody, like I said, the right to like a real modern connected world. So we put a lot of focus in terms of making sure that we enabled networks, enabled handsets, and then, like I said earlier, just in terms of WhatsApp, you also, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Yorba, for example. Yorba's probably MTN's version of a WhatsApp. We've got a 200 million customer base, and obviously, you know, the networks have to evolve. You have to evolve your revenue streams. Look at the voice curve, where right across the world globally, that voice curve has dropped. Less people making calls and airtime and just utilizing the VoIP kind of technology and WhatsApp and all other different ways, the way we communicate. You then go into a data curve where basically you get to a space where guys consume more and more data, and then all of a sudden that starts shrinking revenue because there's fiber and there's the phone and there's satellite, etc., etc. So a lot of other space now from a focus point of view is how do we actually become digital players, be it content, be it streaming, be it gaming, be it video, how do you actually not just enable all the OTT players, but how do you actually become a content provider yourself and play in the digital space and play in the fintech space? I mean, a mobile money solution, which launched in Africa, in South Africa now as well, 2 weeks ago. We just had a relaunch because obviously it's quite successful in the rest of the continent where the banking infrastructure isn't as great. And that's the cocktails you require when you've got bad banking infrastructure, not a lot of availability of, let's say, ATMs, et cetera, et cetera. The mobile money becomes a good play. And from our side, at the MTN South Africa point of view, it becomes a critical solution now, because what we built is virtually another payment mechanism where you can, you know, be it airtime, data, electricity, moving money around, sending money over the border, a lot of other different functionality. But at the same time, just giving people more and more options. So what we do on the MTN chat, so while you're in app, can transact with us over there. You can talk to us. You can create balance. And, you know, just the, some of the mundane stuff, as opposed to having a human intervention, you can just have a, like a chatbot intervention at your own time and convenience. But it's really about reviewing your consumer and your sales strategy. And so, well, the arrogance of retail in the past was always about saying, well, you come into our stores at this time and that time, we'll be open and closed. You come to us, not on Sundays, we close of the year. You can talk to us during these hours. It's quite arrogant from a retail perspective, no matter what you're selling or retailing. And it's really about saying, we're not going to arrogantly ask you to come live in our world, but we're going to come live in your world. And we have to click a call or come in wherever you are. We're going to make sure that you can actually talk to us, contact to us at your convenience, at your time, and at your choice. And I think that's the huge part about just giving customers more choice and more convenience as the time becomes more and more important and valuable.
So Peter, describe for us, this is where it gets a little different in Africa. You know, in the West, you know, we've still got these social networks that sort of dominate in terms of day-to-day engagement. So Facebook, WhatsApp, Twitter, increasingly more focus on Instagram and TikTok and things like that. But it appears that messaging is sort of surpassed social media in general in terms of sort of day-to-day utilization in Africa. Would that be fair to say?
Hi, Brett. Yes. Well, it's fair to say, but not only for Africa. Back in Q1 2015, the four biggest messaging apps eclipsed the four biggest social network apps. And so it's important to know that consumers have shifted from social platforms onto chat platforms. It's not uniquely an emerging markets phenomenon. It's a global phenomenon.
Yep. And so we've talked about WhatsApp and MTN's own chat, but what are the primary sort of messaging architectures that are used? What's most popular on the African continent? Is it different in South Africa versus Nigeria and Ghana, for example, or is it sort of some commonality across the continent?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a lot of commonality. You know, the four largest messaging apps would entail Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, WeChat, and more recently, TikTok. And so if you look at the African continent, you know, that landscape is shifting, but it's still largely painted green, which means it's largely dominated by WhatsApp. These platforms tend to really grab market share in quite a significant way. And so in China, for example, you know, the king of the castle would be WeChat. But certainly elsewhere, it changes. And you have about 64% penetration of the market for WhatsApp, for example, in South Africa.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's. I like how you say it's the green economy almost. Nico, when did you guys start offering mobile money per se with MTN?
Yeah, mobile money was obviously more created an African solution. It was trialed in South Africa probably about 4 or 5, maybe a bit more years ago, and wasn't as effective because I don't think the full function of that. I think we learned some lessons in terms of, made some assumptions in terms of what South Africa would be like versus the rest of the continent. And obviously, like I said earlier, where there's poor banking infrastructure in the rest of Africa, mobile money became a big play. The banks in South Africa are fairly well established, they're well governed, and they're quite resilient. And really, at the moment, there's a huge amount of offtake in terms of just different payment options, be it snap scans, be it transfers, be it all those different solutions. And really, from our side, it's just basically making sure from a customer perspective, we can offer them all those different services and different options and really get the choice in the end. So mobile money has been around for quite a bit in the rest of Africa. But we've had a review and just, like I said, about 2 weeks ago, we just relaunched the South African version of mobile money with much more functionality, much more utility, and at a better cost as all the other costs of technology became cheaper.
And is that app-based or is it still SIM menu-based?
Yeah, no, it's app-based. Both, obviously, from a 2G customer perspective, the normal USSD lines apply.
Yep.
A lot of the guys transacting, they're used to the *#134 and whatever they got. But the app base gives you much more functionality and utility, obviously. And that's why it's important that when you run out a huge strategy from a fintech perspective, active on the mobile money side. You have to get to a point where you're pushing more of the enabled devices to do so. So it'd be quite a bit of, you know, cross-subsidization and just getting the devices at good entry prices, negotiating well with suppliers, and just making sure that you lay the ground and make sure that the ground's fertile to launch the personal solutions.
And so I'm not sure which of you want to answer this, maybe Peter, when we're talking about how WeChat has become integrated from a service perspective, are we talking more about chat being used across these messaging platforms for day-to-day customer service, or is it really more about revenue engagement, like we saw with M-Pesa in Kenya? Has it moved from just mobile money, on these messaging platforms to now savings activity and micro lending and so forth? Where is it, would you say it's 50-50 based on service and revenue engagement, or what's the breakdown, Peter?
So Brett, first of all, we believe it will be the full suite as you'll have in China. So it will impact the way we bank, we shop, and we pay bills and we buy things. In terms of your question of how far in that evolution curve we've come, remember many of these apps, in terms of APIs and able to launch services on them, have only been available for about 18 months now. And so the first use cases were very much around customer self-serve, being able to reach and engage brands through chat versus making a phone call. And those cases and user journeys are very compelling and very exciting for that matter. In fact, we don't believe any brand should ever place a customer on hold again, because the technology now exists to not to have to do that. Now, the evolution into payments has also started. So we now see actual transactions happening, credit card, debit card, and wallet payments, even direct EFT, bank direct debit payments happening on the platform. And as that infrastructure for both self-serve and payments are solidified, we then expect more and more merchants to come on board, so you can do more and more services accordingly.
But you do think, but payments are a primary use case still, right? Like we've seen in China.
Absolutely.
But right now, is it more person to person, or is it more merchant? Is it sort of merchant consumer interaction?
It's more merchant consumer. If you think about it, in Africa, for example, most consumers, or very large portion of the consumers, will not ever own a home, and therefore home mortgage payments, the utility payments on a different construct, and they probably won't earn a car. So this next biggest utility bill would be a phone bill.
Right.
And you're talking about trillions of dollars transacting in that regard.
Yeah, I think my contribution probably to that answer in terms of sales and service, I think what we found in the early days of what we've launched is basically you're primarily a service-based platform. So we're actually trying to take out some of the mundane stuff and just at your convenience just have the conversation. But what we found more and more is a few things. So far, if a customer navigates themselves and by themselves, we're actually finding them that they actually purchase higher. The average, for example, sales be higher in the chat environment or their chat bot environment or not, because they look, they explore, they're not like just taking an order from a salesperson kind of thing. It's either they actually shop around and they buy higher, which is just kind of I wasn't really dumbfounded, but it didn't make logical sense in the beginning. But customers, they don't like being sold to, but they love buying. If you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And the other aspect was also from a call center perspective, you've got this silent salesperson in your utility that the customer navigates your MTN app and they say, well, what's my balance? Let me look at this. And because we can actually send down different propositions below the line to that customer base, you actually find a very different orientation. So instead of going to the open market and seeing what's available, it's actually personalized because we know exactly what you're doing. So we can actually customize the product actually suits what you want. We can give you, for example, a bundle that's made up of a certain amount of voice and a certain amount of data based on your pattern. So the enablement, and as the AI kicks in and we start learning more and more about this customer base, it was chatting to us. On the one hand, you're solving a service problem, but more importantly, you're actually finding many different ways to sell on that platform itself, where the customer actually buys as opposed to being sold to.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Now, in China, we've seen Alipay and WeChat Pay become the sort of default purse. This mobile money deposit and wallet function, if you like, has become the day-to-day spending utility of most of the Chinese population. I think at last count, 87% of them use a mobile wallet function on a daily basis. So are we at that point where you guys can see that sort of the primary value store for most Africans is moving to a mobile wallet? Is that a fair assessment?
I don't think we're there yet. And also, Africa is so diverse, you'll probably will find that you'll have very strong bank-led infrastructure in Nigeria, given legislation and the regulatory framework.
Yep.
South Africa, lots of wallets, but not necessarily at scale. And so you have credit and debit card rails being very active. But, of course, Kenya, you have wallets. So to answer your question, Brett, there's not one answer
for the continent. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the other thing, Brett, is that from a South African perspective specifically, I'm not able to talk to the rest of Africa some because their markets are quite different. But the adoption rates are quite slow in South Africa in the beginning. And then you hit this little tipping point and it just like actually tips over. I mean, I remember when I used to work for one of the banks, local banks over here, and I remember when we launched the ATM many moons ago, the idea of putting a piece of plastic in the hall and relying on money to come out was like one of the most dumbfounded spaces, and that's not going to happen. There's fraud and there's risk, etc. And as more and more people ventured to try it, it became a point where we actually had to rely on more and more ATMs to keep up with the demand. I think the same thing is in these other spaces with regards to different payment methodologies and systems. Guys are now, okay, I draw cash, I pay cash. Now you're going to get debit cards, money transfers, paying through different apps. And I think you'll probably reach, similar like we used to see with the onset of ATMs, like bamboo shoots for the first 2 years, you don't grow at all. In the year three, you just like shoot that like a spring wire. So I think slow adopters, but when it does take off, it really takes off.
Brett, maybe something else to just keep in mind around this discussion. It is true that WeChat has made a profound impact in how people transact in China. That's well known. And if you look at the hyperbolic growth in the way that consumers interact through a chat interface to do transactions, there's been a lot of discussion to what degree this will possibly translate into other regions. I mean, you're well aware that I think there's WeChat into the US, specifically Canada and so forth. And it's our view that mechanism will not be as successful predominantly because it's a closed infrastructure. You have to have this value stored within the WeChat ecosystem. Otherwise, you can't participate. There's a lot of need in the rest of the world where companies, we believe, are looking at infrastructure or a platform where they can provide WeChat-like services, but in an open way. Doesn't matter if it's the payment is through credit cards or direct debits or a wallet or whatever what value store. And I think that's one of the opportunities that we see in terms of what's happening in Africa, where these initiatives are very open to translate that into other markets like the U.S., and Canada. I think that is a very interesting, from my perspective, an interesting perspective. How would WeChat look in other markets than China? It's got to be open.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to find the interoperability initiative that Bill and Melinda Gates launched for mobile wallets there. It sort of speaks to that a little bit, Hannah. So I can't remember the name of it now, but...
You're correct. In Tanzania, I think they just launched in Tanzania where they're attempting to create an open standard. But that's based on integrating these new value stores in Africa. But the need in the rest of the world is different, right? There's already a lot of bank community and there's credit cards. You are used to paying with credit cards. There's nothing stopping. As a matter of fact, the transactions that's happening on MTN South Africa today – the majority of those are card transactions. And it's open. Any card can be used to purchase airtime in WhatsApp on MTN. And for me, that's an important next step in the WeChat phenomena, is to open up the infrastructure so that you can do chat-type commerce transactions, but with any payment instrument, not just mobile wallets.
All right, great. Well, thanks, Hannes, for your input into there. Guys, let's just have a quick break, and then after the break, let's drill down on this a little bit more, and particularly how the chat economy sort of been mobilized and how Clickatell's been involved in that as well. So you're listening to Breaking Banks, guys. I'm your host, Brett King. We are talking African chat and mobile money evolution. And we'll be right back after this break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
The Voice America Live Events channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed, by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
And we're back from the break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. And before the break, we had on from MTN in South Africa, Nico Jacobs. We had Peter de Villiers, the co-founder and CEO at Clickatell, along with Hannes van Rensburg, the chief commercial officer at Clickatell. So maybe Hannes or Peter, let's talk about the chat economy at large. What's the opportunity size for the chat economy in both Africa and globally, where this is not just about mobilizing chat, but also the automation with the introduction of chatbots? We've been talking a lot about that over the last few years. So do you want to sort of, can one of you guys sort of size the chat economy as an entirety?
Yeah, I think, Brett, the sizing that we've done, the TAM, so to speak, the total available market, currently is about $75 billion. Certainly our serviceable market, if we look at Africa in particular, the US, Canada, territories, then we're looking at about 3.2 billion. But that TAM and SAM is growing quite aggressively. And the way to get to that TAM and SAM is you have to go look at the intersection between chat and commerce transactions in particular in the B2B2C environment.
And so how are people using chat from a commerce perspective today? What's the most common use?
Yeah, the most common use is very much a starting out as self-serve, you know, skipping the queue on the call center and then right. doing a bill payment. So it's largely driven by bill payments. And we believe that it's less so about the technology and more so about the convenience. I mean, brands and CEOs and CMOs are struggling with low engagement and inconvenience with regard to doing business with them. And we believe that chat commerce is that game changer that will fundamentally bring convenience and engagement.
So when we're talking about sort of skipping the call center line, you're definitely talking first and foremost about chatbot interaction and maybe then passing it through to a human, right?
Absolutely. In fact, we are highly skewed towards chatbot because a lot of the call center queries are actually not that complicated. We're not trying to sell you, you know, a new financial services product from the get-go. That happens later. Once we know more about you, we have more context. But you are correct, Brett. It starts with a chatbot. You can break out into a live agent if you don't want to deal with the bot. And that live agent picks up from where the bot left off.
Now, one of the other elements we see in Instagram is we've seen these digital influencers, these AI-based constructs that have their own influencer networks now and influencer campaigns, and now brands are getting designing their own digital influencer. So they're not paying human influencers, they're using digital influencers to sponsor their brand. Have we got to that point where chatbots are starting to develop personalities that are branded, or are we not quite there yet?
No, we're getting there, you know, and one of the major banks we're working with, their chatbot is called Toby. And, you know, we believe that almost all the major brands will have several bots with personality and personas. You see, what happens, Brett, when you put a brand inside the address book of their customer, they become a persona in that address book. And that's exactly what's being achieved with chatbots.
Right. So that's, Hannes, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think that maybe just to give a bit of a perspective, Brett, is there is a lot of chat on browsers. I mean, that little thing that pops up and say, hey, I can help you, and constantly try and become part of the conversation. That's not really what we're talking about. We are very much focused on mobile-based chat.
Right.
And that's why the emphasis is on chat. And why is that important? It's important because history and context becomes much more richer. If you think about your chat interactions with a person to person, you have a long history, and you almost have a certain character to the conversation that you have over time. And because we have this context in mobile, which we don't have in browser-based chat environments, the persona and what the chatbot can react to is, and the information that's available to the chatbot is much more rich. And that for me personally was a big aha to understand that what is happening in browsers is actually very different to what is happening in these chat applications on mobile devices.
And would it be fair to say that customers on the African continent, I know you guys are talking more globally here, but you know, customers on the African continent are emerging into this chat landscape predominantly through mobile, and they're generally not using browsers at all, right?
Yeah, but
I think that's a phenomenon that's not just happening in Africa. If I look at my teenage daughters and, you know, that part of the population, I've always thought that maybe we shouldn't call it the chat economy, we should call it the thumb economy. I mean, the way that they interact with everything is through sending short bursts of messages and responding to messages coming back. So I think it's a very natural way on mobile devices how people are evolving to interact. And so why not interact with brands like that too?
These young whippersnappers. Yeah. Go ahead, Peter.
Sorry, just to that point, yeah, there's just been a report out by Visual Capitalist on the top downloaded apps in the world, right? These are any app. And the top six of those apps are all chat apps. And so if you look at where consumers spend their time, especially Gen Y and millennials and Gen Zs, it is mobile first, not just in Africa, but everywhere, to Hans's point.
Yeah, I find it interesting, like in terms of how I use Instagram versus how, you know, my kids do. I use Insta, you know, to document my life, whereas they're using it like a typical social messaging platform, and they use the DM and chat just as much as anything else. And then, of course, you've got Snapchat and WhatsApp, on top of that. So, yeah.
I think one more comment, which is important to maybe make at this stage, is that chat has become, it's the same way the internet has become a platform for internet banking and e-commerce, and mobile apps have become a platform for mobile banking and app commerce. Chat is so pervasive and so far-reaching that, you know, WhatsApp recorded 2 billion users just earlier this week. And so it has become a platform. And what's the beautiful intersection between that platform's ubiquity and reach, now with the intelligence and smarts with AI, has transformed what you can do on that platform.
Yeah.
I think the other big play, Brett, from what we're picking up our side, is really a small migration, I think, right? So the chatbot allows customers to obviously interact at their choice 24/7. What we're finding is a lot of much less phone calls into call centers because guys can go into the self-help space. So we looked at basically the high volume journeys in our part and said, okay, if we create these chatbots to engage with those directives, it becomes a lot easier. And actually, number one, it frees up our sales force time. So you're not migrating the customer to chatbot, you're migrating certain of the transactions to chatbot. And then all the mundane stuff goes away, but you've still got the human person to handle the more complicated things. That's the one thing we're seeing. And secondly, also, as less calls go to the call center, your efficiency in terms of utilizing your sales environment to do more proactive selling or to actually get more into the sales space actually just frees up time. So it's becoming very useful just from terms of your business efficiency models in terms of what low levels of work and the mundane stuff you can push and migrate to for customers to use those environments and just maximize the app time of your sales folks. It becomes really much more efficient.
So let's talk about that tactically. Is when a customer comes along, you know, how are they finding the chatbot? Do they look to engage the call center, go to the website or the app and click on a link and then, for a phone number and get redirected to a chatbot first? Do they go searching for the brand on the messaging architecture to have a chat with them? You know, what's the funnel look like in terms of getting them into brand engagement on chat?
That's a great question.
So maybe a general answer. Okay, you go, Peter.
I'll do a general answer, then Nico can give you the exact journey for MTN. The general answer, Brett, would be that you can start with a call center experience because most consumers typically just call that number because that's what they're used to. But then in the call center, we have call deflection. So you can press 1 or 2 for immediate assistance, and then the chat will pop up on your screen on the channel of your preference. Nico and the MTN team have designed several ways to get consumers into that journey. Let him speak to that.
Yeah, so I think the MTN chat, the way it's loaded, is loaded like a contact. So it's normally one of your WhatsApp contacts. You pull it out and you'll just pop a message and say, hello, hi, and just start the engagement. And the chatbot will give you some options. What do you want to do today? You want to look at your balance. You want to buy, manage your bank account, et cetera, et cetera. And customers will choose, go into the chat channel and say, I'd like to buy a date. And obviously, we'll prompt for yourself or somebody else. So we just make the journey much more useful. The added advantage in terms of that user journey, besides obviously purchasing and taking very old archaic distribution infrastructure, because I mean, we should pause there. The infrastructure in South Africa, the old distribution was an informal distribution. You getting all the distribution points. So where the customer woke up, where you sleep, where you work, and you put little physical distribution points in that space. What we forget is that the customer always has his phone with him. So if you can basically be in an app and just utilize your phone, the convenience becomes much more thorough. And from a managing your bank card, loading, and just using it as a wallet. But importantly also, what we're getting a lot of bread is just the customer's response. A customer's more likely to respond to a chatbot than to somebody personal on the other side of the line, because I'd look at you and say that wasn't a great experience. And in our functionality, there's an option to actually give us some feedback, and that feedback is so rich, because hey, I wish you could do the following, which gives you the deep insight, so you can lead by the customer insight and give them what they want, as opposed to you sitting elegantly thinking, let me give you what I think you want. So it just gets you closer to the customer's request.
So Hannes, what's the psychology of a customer using chat versus getting on a phone call or, you know, walking into a retail branch or outlet?
Well, I think it is more convenient and more easy than any of the other channels. The one thing that I wanted to add to the discussion that we've just had is, one way of course, activating a bot is to push something to a customer. Hey, your bill is due. Hey, your balance is low, right? Do you want to do something about it? And it's very different to any other way of reaching out to a customer, because the customer can directly respond whenever it's convenient to them, not immediately. You know, they can wait for like a day. The difference, the alternative approaches would be a telephone call, right? If I don't answer the telephone call, well, it just goes away. Or an email, it goes into my inbox, and then I have to do all kinds of things to log on and so forth to carry on with the discussion. The difference here is that it is something that can be pushed to you directly. It can stay there, and you can respond whenever you want to. So the idea of context and the idea of a state that does not change over time makes it very convenient for people to interact with. They don't have to worry about forgetting about things, but they don't feel pressured to act immediately like a telephone call. So I think the psychology is much more comfortable, much more personal.
Less pressure.
Much more.
Just on my time frame. Yeah.
I get that. I'll do it on my terms. Yeah.
Now, Nico, you mentioned the Gini coefficient at the start of our conversation. Obviously, for audience that aren't familiar with the Gini coefficient, it's a measure of inequality between the richest and the poorest people in the nation. But you also mentioned the fact that, we're talking about different types of handsets. Is there a demographic split here in terms of take-up of chat, or does it work whether it's feature phone versus, the latest smartphone? Is it sort of across the board demographically, the use of chat?
Yeah, I think that's the coolest thing about it, because what this MTN chat platform is showing us is that basically the demographics is coming from your 3G user right till your top end Apple Samsung user. And the nice thing about that is because the functionality is the same, right? So I think the reason why people start engaging is because it's saying, well, the fact that I earn less than you doesn't mean my time is less valuable than yours. And that's what the chat actually enables them to do. So a lot of, like I said earlier, a lot of our, from a strategic point of view, say you have to align your strategy in terms of how do you actually get these, let's say 3G or feature phone, smartphones into the market, so customers can engage in the platform. And obviously, the more gets to the bigger screen, the more functional the phone, obviously, it's better in the richer experience. But at the same time, what we're seeing is you're getting demographics from all different customers, and we can actually see also, and I think as it evolves, you'll also be able to find on the app while you're in the MTN chat app, you say, well, if you haven't got enough cash for the end of the month, we can actually lend you, let's say, for example, $2 of airtime until you actually get the end of the month, and you just pay it up, and we actually get the learning behavior in terms of we've gave you $2 and you pay it up, and then you gave you $2.50 and you gave you $3. You can actually get a good credit assessment in terms of the Ethereum's ability to buy back, which is also useful to us. And then just the last thing to chat, Adam, to harness this space, is the fact that what we're seeing in this environment, like you say, for example, just pushing sales pitches, your balance is too low and all those kind of things. Customers don't know what they don't know. And as you, actually, as you basically push certain things to them, like, for example, Hannes was saying, while you're in app, as opposed to being in app and halfway through your YouTube session, you just use the data, this app will say to you, for example, you only got 50 megs left. Brett, would you like to recharge? Click one, click two, and you're back in again, as opposed to going out of the app, going to your bank account, etc. So it's really about just creating that convenience platforms and enabling your asset and the network infrastructure.
Good. So, Peter, that gets me back to what you guys are doing at Clickatel. Talk to me about a typical project at a bank in, you know, that you work with around the world in terms of integrating chat. What does it look like? You know, where does it start? Who's the sponsor in the bank? How long does it take? You know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. Well, first of all, banks are dealing with disruption all around them, from regulatory transformation all the way to, you know, challenger banks. And in the meantime, their cost of infrastructure is not going down anytime soon. Now, the idea of serving your clients through websites and branded apps and email are universally what banks are doing, but they're realizing that it's not enough because consumers really want the branch or the bank to come to them. So we would typically engage with C-level execs initially around their digital journeys and transformation objectives. Most of these center around becoming more convenient and more accessible to their customers and offering more value-added services. And so we help banks reduce the decision time by way of devising a pilot program for them or a proof of concept. This is typically 6 to 12 week program where we pick a particular area within the bank to go solve for. This might be anything from we're going to launch a new credit card, we would like to have a card concierge or FAQ service with that card so people are comfortable to use it, or we have these top 5 call center events that really clog up our teams. We'd like to reduce some of the pressure on that call center. Can we, you know, start with that? So there's various touch points. We would scope a 12-week program with limited investment expectation from their side, just to prove out that consumers actually are quite comfortable with the channel, given it's a fairly new set of constructs. And then that would then go over into a full commercial implementation.
And Hannes, what are the markets you guys are looking at the moment or active in?
So our prime focus, of course, is Africa. It's where we're pretty successful. It's also a very good lab. But we're very active at the moment in Canada and the U.S., as well as Mexico and Brazil. So there's activity, prospects, and clients that we are busy with in those markets as well.
Great. So, guys, we've only got a couple of minutes left. So I thought in the meantime, Nico, tell us what you guys have got planned for the rest of 2020 in respect to chat generally.
Yeah, so obviously we see that chatbot evolving into different parts of our business through our call centers, all our different channels. And, you know, as a business, you have to understand the channel economics of each of your channels, because obviously the cost of selling and servicing is different to all those things. So what we're finding is with these chatbots, you start as a service platform, customers engage, they increase the brand love, your brand equity increases because it's a seamless, frictionless environment to transact with. At the back of that service offer, you've got such a super silent salesperson that actually starts pushing information to you, pushing suggestions, and also because they're so bespoke and we know who we're talking to, you can actually send down very specific, let's say, products or solutions to them, like 3 days left and here's 2 gigs with 4 day or 5 day validity. So you can actually just tie the person over to the next top up kind of thing. And then, you know, once you've got the service platform and the selling platform done, the safe platform kicks in, because the cost of managing the channel is so much cheaper. There's less human interaction. And yeah, it's just you serve, you sell, you save. And in that, you just get the brand equity and get customers engaged in your brand, and you can tick a good few critical boxes.
We've run out of time, but it would have been interesting to explore how MTN sort of stepping on the toes and both partnering with banks in the region as well. But unfortunately, we have to leave that for another show. Peter, how do people find out more about Clickatel's platform on the chat side?
Yeah, well, there's lots of information available. They can just Google Clickatel or Chat Commerce and they'll find us.
Fantastic. Well, Peter, Nico, Hannes, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks today.
Thanks, Brett.
No problem. Well, guys,
Thank you so much, Brett.
Thank you. So you guys have been listening to Breaking Banks. Don't forget, we're the number one fintech podcast and radio show on the planet, running since May 2013, coming up to our anniversary in May, obviously, for 7 years. So that's exciting. If you guys listen to the show regularly, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Podcast or Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever it is that you download the show from. And don't forget also to give us a shout out on social media at Breaking Banks One on Twitter, at Breaking Banks on Insta, on Facebook. You can look at search for Breaking Banks. Keep in touch with us and don't forget to check out some of our other podcasts, Breaking Banks Europe, the Finovate podcast with Greg Palmer, and Tech on Reg with Dara Chitowski. This is Brett King. You've been listening to Breaking Banks from Provoke Media, provoke.fm. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.